Executive Vice President of Talent Relations and Interim Raw General Manager. I respect you. I respect the fact that each week you come out here in front of the millions of fans in the WWE Universe, live on the USA Network, with this awesome, completely lost, deer in the headlights look on your face. I respect the fact that you don't know how close to hold the microphone to your mouth when you speak. I respect the fact that you used to compete in this ring with your awesome Kentucky waterfall mullet, and you were never any good, but you somehow still ascended to the top of the WWE corporate structure, showing the world newfound levels of brown nosery. But above all, I respect the fact that never before in this business has somebody with so little done so much. I respect you. How's that sound? Is that good enough for you?
You're listening to Smack Talk Radio Live, your source for news, views, and opinions on everything wrestling, from the big leagues to the local scene. Now, here's James McDonald and Corey Callahan.
All right, let's get this thing going, everyone. We are on the road to Survivor Series, but maybe they should change the name to Barely Surviving Series. Hello, everyone. You're listening to Smack Talk Radio Live, and we're coming to you from where else? The Smack Talk Studios in Vancouver, British Columbia. I'm Corey Callahan, joined alongside James McDonald.
Well, I gotta say, Corey, I am not exactly agreeing with the decisions made by the creative team lately, but I am interested to see how they move forward into Survivor Series. Heck, The Rock alone is enough to keep me coming back for more. We have another awesome show for you this week, highlighted by our chance to chat with the son of the legendary British Bulldog, Harry Smith, better known as D.H. Smith.
It was a good interview for sure, and it gets even better, James, because tonight, in our local wrestling scene, we are speaking live to a man who secured his spot into the main event at ECCW's Halloween Hell last Saturday, Davis Kings, or better known to the local wrestling community as the Honky Tonk Kid.
And don't worry, we're still talking about all the latest going on in the WWE in our Tale of the Tape and Post-to-Post report. And in the spirit of Halloween, tonight's top five is the top five craziest wrestling costumes.
As always, you can check out www.smacktalkradiolive.com or join in on facebook.com/smacktalkradio.
Right now, though, let's missile drop kick things off with the Tale of the Tape.
It's time for the Tale of the Tape.
All right, Smack Talk Radio Live back once again on a Thursday evening.
Quite excited, as always.
How are you doing tonight?
Not too bad, actually.
Yeah?
Yeah, how about yourself?
I'm doing all right. It's been a long day. I've been working on this show for a long time today.
It's been a long day for me too, buddy.
Yeah, it seems that for some reason it took longer today than it normally takes. So
I can't
quite figure that out, but
okay.
So before we get going, I want to remind everyone just once again what the plan is for Smack Talk Radio Live. This is Thursday night, of course, and this is our bread and butter show, as I'm going to call it. It's where we put the heart and soul of our work into. So Thursday night is live. We talk everything WWE. We talk local wrestling. We get into top five. It's our
product that we're putting out there.
And then, of course, Monday nights, we are going live right after Monday Night Raw, or shortly after Monday Night Raw, I should say. And that's where we just basically jump into the studios, put the headset on, get in front of the microphone.
Yeah, it's a little bit more amateur, a little bit more raw. It's just a chance for, you know, you guys to have something to listen to right after you watch Monday Night Raw. And if you want to call in or write us an email, tell us what you think.
And that was what I was going to say next. We want people to take part in our Monday night show especially. So if you do watch Monday Night Raw and you want to take part, you want to voice an opinion on something you're watched on TV, email us on air at smacktalkradiolive.com, or you can call in by grabbing Skype and adding Smack Talk Radio Live to your Skype, and that's how we will bring callers into the show temporarily until we get our phone system set up in the studio.
Big things are in the works, people. Big things are in the works.
Okay, James. Tale of the tape. We got to cut it a little short this week because we got two interviews as opposed to one.
So. Yeah, this is the tale of the tape. This is just the segment where we get a chance to kind of go over and evaluate the programs that are going on in the WWE right now. So let's start it off with the big one, I think, and that's John Cena asking The Rock to tag up with him at the Survivor Series.
I'm sick of you guys thinking you run this program. And I certainly, I'm not going to do this out of friendship. But if I'm going to defeat The Miz and R-Truth, well, my partner is going to have to be somebody who's going to bring it. I'm going to send this invite out. I don't know if he's going to accept or not. You called on the Thunder. Now you got it. At Survivor Series, I choose my partner to be The Rock.
So there you have it, John Cena formally inviting The Rock to team with him at Survivor Series, the 25th anniversary of Survivor Series, which is taking place at Madison Square Gardens this year, James.
Should be big.
What are your thoughts on that?
Well, my opinion on this whole thing is I'm a fan of the old school type of booking. I personally don't think we should really see Rock and Cena in a ring touching until WrestleMania, which is kind of what they build a year in advance, right?
I totally agree.
But...
well, why don't you catch everyone up with what exactly has gone on in terms of John Cena and The Rock?
All right, let's just quickly go over how it pretty much got to this point. It kind of all started two pay-per-views ago at the Hell in a Cell pay-per-view, where John Cena lost his 10th WWE Championship only 2 weeks after winning it to Alberto Del Rio after he was locked out of the cell by Del Rio's ring announcer, Ricardo Rodriguez.
I like to refer to this as the summer of stats for John Cena because it just seemed like he was increasing
his number
of world championships. You know, it just seemed like you put the belt on him, you take it off, you put it back on.
Yeah, I really didn't like how they were flip-flopping the belt back and forth.
I don't think anyone really liked it, but anyways, continue to go on.
Anyways, but then on the October 11th edition of Raw, John Laurinaitis would announce that John Cena will have a rematch with Del Rio at the upcoming Vengeance pay-per-view, which already happened. Now, 1 week later, on the 18th, he would team up with Jim Ross to defeat Alberto Del Rio and Michael Cole, allowing him to choose the stipulation for his match at the pay-per-view. Cena would then announce that the match would be a last man standing match, which, if you don't know, means you have to answer the 10 count of the referee, or if you don't, you lose the match, right? Now, despite what we'll call a valiant effort, Cena would lose his rematch with Del Rio at Vengeance, unable to make the 10 count after interference by Awesome Truth, Miz and R-Truth.
The second pay-per-view in a row that we saw Miz and R-Truth finish the show off by attacking the main event.
Yeah, it's like they couldn't come up with something original, you know?
All right, yeah, I know.
Anyways, on the last episode of Raw now, after a brutal beating on Cena by Miz and R-Truth following their handicap match at the end of the show, Laurinaitis would then announce that Cena can choose his partner for a tag match against them at the Survivor Series. Now, as you heard in our clip, Cena quickly chose his rival, The Rock, to a huge ovation from the Texas crowd.
So, let's get into this here. John Cena, The Rock at Survivor Series. Now, the one thing that boggles my mind, as I'm sure it boggles everyone else out there, is we already knew this was happening before Monday Night Raw took place this week.
Oh, isn't this so
stupid? As I said on Monday, they've actually issued a press release saying that Cena and The Rock would team up. They've issued that well prior to Monday. Yet, on Monday, John Cena, who is apparently the staple of the WWE, did not know that The Rock and Cena were teaming up, apparently.
Oh, didn't that was just an insult to all of our intelligence.
I'm guessing they did this, obviously, for highlight package material, right? They need the video footage of Cena inviting The Rock to be his partner at Survivor Series, and that video footage will be used in promo videos from here until WrestleMania. That is the reason why they did it.
Well, of course, that's why WWE does half the things that they do. But the thing that really bothers me, Corey, is just the way that they set the whole thing up. Like John Cena going and asking The Rock to be his partner, it doesn't make sense to me with all the buildup that we've had over the past year.
It would have been a lot better to see someone force these two
exactly.
to be together.
Exactly, and then you have like an uneasy alliance between the two, and that could really add to their feud heading into WrestleMania.
Because now it seems like these two are almost good friends, as we've seen with all the main event rivalries for the last little while.
Triple H and CM Punk's a good one.
But now these guys are buddies. They're going to be teaming up.
It does not.
We're heading into the biggest show of the year. Not yet, obviously, but that's the road these two are going down.
Right.
And we're starting their storyline off with them being good friends, or at least coinciding to help take out the Miz and R-Truth.
Yeah, it just, yeah, no, that doesn't make any sense to me whatsoever. I mean, they could have come up with something way better than this, having somebody force them to pair up and be a team, right? And that just, like, yeah, like I just said, it would have added so much more, I think, to the feud. Personally, like I was saying earlier, I don't think they even should be seen in the same ring together until WrestleMania.
I agree. I mean, I wasn't even a fan of those two having physical interaction at last year's WrestleMania.
It's just another classic example of WWE having something good on their hands, and they decided they have to rush it.
I was just about to say that. Now, they announced that this would be a tag team match. John Cena and The Rock versus The Miz and R-Truth. This isn't a typical Survivor Series match like we normally see.
No, not yet anyways, but...
So, I don't think it is going to be a Survivor Series match. From what they said, John Laurinaitis had said was Cena and The Rock as a tag team versus Miz and R-Truth.
That's how it stands right now. But you know how the WWE likes to.
But then let me
announce things.
But then let me bring this to everyone's attention. You go on WWE.com's website right now, and if you actually go to their Survivor Series page, it reads, WWE sources have confirmed that The Rock and John Cena will be part of a traditional 5-on-5 Survivor Series tag team match. Those are the official words. That doesn't even make sense.
No, because I always thought that a traditional Survivor Series match was 4-on-4, first of all. But they're announcing on the website that it's going to be a 5-on-5 match yet.
No, a 5-on-5 tag team match. Whatever I don't even know what that means. Do you?
So it's not like... elimination style like Survivor Series traditionally is?
I have no idea. I mean, I don't even think they know. That's where we're at right now. That's where we're at. We have no idea.
I agree with you there, man. It just seems like they're flying by the seat of their pants.
And what about Miz and R-Truth in this whole situation? Are they even going to be somewhat in the spotlight for Survivor Series?
Oh, they're going to be totally over-encompassed by Cena and The Rock.
Exactly.
I mean, but then again, who do you have to place against them?
I know, but do we have to place anybody against them? This could have been a confrontation that starts at Survivor Series, starting to build towards WrestleMania. We don't have to put these two in a match. This could have been Cena in a match against someone. The Rock shows up, and we go from there. You know, or, not an official match with The Rock.
Or you could have had something like Team Cena versus Team Rock, maybe. But don't have Cena and Rock touch the whole match or be in the ring together.
That would have been gold as well.
Yeah, but...
I don't know.
But, you know, it seems like WWE just, what's the worst way we can move forward with this angle? And let's do it that way.
So, knowing that these two are teaming up at Survivor Series, how are you feeling about their potential match at WrestleMania?
Well, honestly, to me personally, I think it takes a little bit of the luster off the match. But, I mean, I'm still excited for it. I can't wait for WrestleMania, honestly.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well.
What about you?
No, I mean... I don't want to see these two in the ring together at Survivor Series. There's something magical about waiting for these two to wait until Miami.
It's the old school booking style that they've totally thrown out the window.
And I would just love to have them wait. Don't rush this. I would just love to have these two wait until WrestleMania. You know, you need something to start the storyline off heading into WrestleMania. And yes, that can start at Survivor Series, but don't put The Rock in the ring this early. Don't.
No, I totally agree.
Survivor Series is already sold out. You don't need to have him in the ring. Don't put him there.
Yeah, just The Rock alone sold out Survivor Series.
Exactly. Promote his appearance, but don't put him in the ring.
So do you think maybe they should have done something like, I don't know, have him in the same kind of role as he was at the last year's WrestleMania?
Well, first of all, I disagree with them announcing his appearance at Survivor Series. I understand why they did it, because that sells tickets for Survivor Series. But
of course,
I would have loved to have a surprise visit from The Rock while Cena's in a match, and then it starts from there. That's what I would have loved to have.
Oh, absolutely. That would have been a great idea. But that's the thing with The Rock. I mean, you can't... See, WWE's not going to do surprise appearances with somebody who has the drawing power of The Rock.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just because you announce The Rock's going to show up and it's going to sell out.
I find nothing's a surprise with the WWE as of now. I mean, We'll get into it in the post-to-post report. There's a return of someone coming up as well, and it could have been a surprise, but instead they've ruined it, and they're announcing it.
Not really since July, yeah.
It doesn't happen anymore.
No.
I don't know if that's because of the internet or what, but it just doesn't seem to happen.
I think the internet has a big part to play in it, but...
All right, James, let's move on here. CM Punk facing Alberto Del Rio for the title, potentially.
It's not official.
I never received my one-on-one title shot after you cashed in your Money in the Bank contract on me. So, I propose the question, Berto. You got the cojones to put the title on the line against me?
Listen to me, perro. I will defend my title against any worthy opponent. The problem, Punk, is you're not worthy. You don't even win your match last night at Vengeance, so for me, that makes you a loser. And amiguito, losers don't deserve title shots.
Well, here's another program that absolutely surprised nobody.
I did call it on Monday when CM Punk's music hit to walk out to confront Del Rio.
Good on you, buddy. But this program now, again, this kind of all started back two pay-per-views ago at the Hell in a Cell where Alberto Del Rio, like I mentioned before, pinned CM Punk to take John Cena's title. Now, after Hell in a Cell, Laurinaitis became the general manager of Raw. And Punk would then team up with Triple H at the Vengeance pay-per-view. And while they would lose to R-Truth and The Miz after Kevin Nash decides to interfere yet again, this time powerbombing Triple H really sickly on his neck.
Yeah, that was quite devastating. I'll get into the Triple H and Kevin Nash in a little bit, but continue on.
But the next night on Raw, Punk would interrupt Del Rio and he'd challenge him to a title match, claiming that he never got his rematch after SummerSlam, kind of like what we just... kind of playing on what we just heard in the clip there. Now, after Del Rio denies Punk multiple times, saying that he's a loser and he doesn't, you know, basically deserve a title shot, Laurinaitis would then interrupt, make his way to the ring, claiming that he's fed up with everything. Now, after proposing Punk versus Del Rio for the title at Survivor Series, Laurinaitis would tell...
At SummerSlam, you mean.
Oh, what?
At SummerSlam, you mean.
No, he proposed Punk versus Del Rio for the title at Survivor Series.
I apologize. Sorry.
Yeah, no worries. But Laurinaitis would tell Punk that the only way that this match would happen would be if Punk publicly declared his respect for him in front of everybody. Now, as we heard in our starting clip, Punk would rip into John Laurinaitis, blasting him for doing so little in the business to get to where he is, and telling him that that's pretty much what he respects him for. Now, Laurinaitis would claim that, no, this isn't good enough, I want an actual declaration of respect, and he would think about making the match for about another week. So, anyways, Punk would respond to this by beating down on Del Rio and Ricardo Rodriguez, with the latter taking a pretty sick-looking go to sleep.
So, it does sound like we are going to see CM Punk versus Del Rio for the title at Survivor Series. The third wheel in this whole situation will be John Laurinaitis. How are you feeling about that possible triangle heading into that pay-per-view?
Well, I find it kind of odd that they're kind of moving away from the confrontation between Triple H and John Laurinaitis, because that was kind of the direction I thought they were going to go.
Well, they've also walked away from the earlier storyline of CM Punk and John Laurinaitis, like earlier in the summer. Do you know what I mean? Like, they walked away from that. John Laurinaitis went to Triple H, and now it seems like John Laurinaitis is coming back to CM Punk. I don't think we actually will find what the backstory was with these two earlier.
Doesn't it just seem like over these last few months there's just so many loose ends that they've left unknown?
And I keep waiting to see when they're going to tie these loose ends up, but I don't think they are going to be tied up.
No, and that's the worst part.
Yeah. So it's almost like Laurinaitis and CM Punk is a fresh storyline, but there were so many unanswered questions from before, but I don't get the feeling that we're going to get those questions answered. So really, we're starting off brand new with these two all over again.
And we get no resolution, and that's what really bothers me. We get no sense of resolve to anything.
And then you throw into the fact that you have Alberto Del Rio, and he will probably be overshadowed by Punk and Laurinaitis.
Yeah, I would imagine. See, that's, again, well, this probably goes, well, my opinion anyways, that Del Rio's getting kind of stale, but...
I disagree with that, but I think he's doing very well as champion. I actually am enjoying him. I mean, I don't find him to be boring on the mic. I find him to be decent. I think he needs to be a little more intimidating, or I don't know if that's the word.
His character's really evolved little from when he debuted.
Well, how would you like him to evolve when he's not even, he hasn't really been in the spotlight yet? I mean, yes, he's champion, but they're not giving him the time of day to convince everyone that he should be champion, because every single time he has an opportunity, it's not about Del Rio, it's about something else. It's about Nash, it's about Cena, it's about Punk, it's about Triple H.
You know what?
It's just about everyone but Del Rio.
And you know what? Honestly, Corey, I think that just boils down to bad booking on the WWE's part.
It is. And the only person who suffers here is Del Rio, because he's not getting a fair shot at proving himself. I thought at Vengeance, when he faced John Cena, and like that spot where Cena threw him into the barricade, I thought that was amazing. I also thought that attitude adjustment into the announcer's table, that was as well done as I have ever seen a table spot.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying Del Rio's not a hard worker.
So I know he has the potential to put on good matches.
Oh, yeah, he does.
But they're not giving him the chance to excel a storyline that's centered around him.
Well, again, part of it is bad booking, but another, you know, part of it is Del Rio himself too, right?
You think so? I don't think so. I think he's good. I think the crowd hates him when he comes out, and that's a good thing. We're not talking X-Pac heat. We're talking legitimate heel heat.
Yeah.
He comes out arrogant. He's got Ricardo Rodriguez. He's got the nice expensive car. I think he's doing well so far.
Yeah, well, maybe we'll just have to agree to disagree on that one.
So Del Rio and Punk Survivor Series, what are your early predictions? I mean, we still have some time to build this up, but early thoughts.
Well, I have a feeling that they're going to swerve somehow. There's going to be some sort of swerve. I don't know involving who. Maybe Mick Foley. I don't know.
Okay.
But there's going to be some sort of swerve,
yeah,
I think, in this match. I think you're going to see Del Rio retain. I don't think you're going to see Punk with the belt.
No, you think?
I think Del Rio is going to retain, but I don't think it's going to be a clean victory. I think there's going to be a swerve of some sort.
Because
that seems to be the direction they're going in nowadays at the end of all their pay-per-views.
Do you have an issue with the fact that Punk is using the excuse that I never got my rematch after you cashed in Money in the Bank? Like, basically, he was supposed to get his rematch. He never did. We're now months later, and he's now asking for that rematch.
You know what, Corey? Honestly, I don't like the whole having an instant rematch after you lose the title anyways. I think that's a stupid idea, personally.
But then that would just mean that anyone could cash in a rematch months down the road, and we would never really be able to follow when and who gets these rematches. I mean, really, what's... I mean,
I don't know. I think the whole rematch thing is a stupid idea anyways.
Yeah.
I think that once a guy loses, you should have another number one contender in the waiting. It's kind of like what they do in MMA and in boxing and stuff like that. Like, when you see a guy lose the title, he doesn't get a rematch for his title right away.
You know, they
yes and no. I can't. You know, that is kind of wrong.
That is kind of wrong, because you will see rematches
in
MMA.
No,
but not always.
I take that back. Yeah.
Not always. But there's no official set in stone rule, right?
No.
But I just, for me, I have a bit of an issue with a guy. You didn't get your rematch after SummerSlam because you went in a different direction.
You went into a useless feud against Triple H.
Yeah, but don't come back months later and then say, "Oh, I never got my rematch. I want it now." To me, that doesn't work.
No.
So
it's like, I don't know. I don't. It seems like the automatic rematch thing is like embedded into their contract or something.
And that's how they're starting this whole thing off, is by saying CM Punk never got his rematch.
I don't know.
It's a cheap way to start this program
off. Yeah, it very much cheapens it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, shall we move on to Triple H and his once best friend now turning on him? Kevin Nash. Things got very heated this Monday night on Raw.
Don't tell me that you're not in this building. I know you're here. If the last 20 years have meant anything, get your ass in this ring. I don't want to talk about it. I don't want to think about it. No discussions. You and me, man to man. I am going to kick your ass, Kev.
Well, the last time we saw these two in a program together was back in 2003 when they had that Hell in a Cell match. I don't know if you remember that.
Yes,
back
that is
at
right.
Back at the now-defunct Bad Blood pay-per-view.
Oh, okay. Good memory.
And people were asking, back then, why Kevin Nash was in a marquee matchup, and here it is 8 years later, and he's back in a marquee matchup.
I won't even go down that road.
So, anyways, I'm going to quickly run down on how this all went down. Like we were mentioning, Hell in a Cell, or after Hell in a Cell, sorry, Triple H was relieved of his duties as chief operating officer by Vince McMahon himself, and of course, replaced by John Laurinaitis, we all know that. He would then team with CM Punk at Vengeance, again, stuff we were going over before, to face Miz and R-Truth, who Triple H had fired 2 weeks previously, actually, and then John Laurinaitis turned around and just rehired them back, which is a whole other, you know, illogical can of worms that we could open, but... again, at the end of the match at Vengeance, Kevin Nash would interfere, and he, you know, like we talked about earlier, he would just do a sick jackknife powerbomb on Triple H, dropping him on his neck, pretty much. And like we heard in our clip, the next night on Raw, Triple H would demand that Laurinaitis produce Nash so he could, quote, kick his ass. He would then be ambushed by Nash, who used a sledgehammer to smoke him in the back, which, I don't know, personally, I thought that looked kind of weak, but...
I think a sledgehammer to the back would cripple someone, but you seem to disagree with me on that.
It's in the context of wrestling, yes.
Come here. I have a sledgehammer here. Just to prove my point.
Only if you put your hand over the top.
All right, finish off with what you're going on here.
Now, on Raw, after being helped to the backstage area, Triple H was then attacked again by Kevin Nash as he was strapped to a gurney, again with a sledgehammer, taking a shot to the head this time. Now, that I thought looked a little bit more sick than the than the shot to the kind of back kidneys. But, yeah, that's and, you know, Triple H was then loaded into an ambulance, rushed off to a hospital for... quote-unquote medical attention, and that's kind of where this program's left off heading into Survivor Series.
So I'm a little back and forth on this, because I would feel if I was someone else in the WWE, if I was another wrestler in the WWE, I would be a little ticked off that Triple H's longtime buddy Kevin Nash is coming in for a main event storyline.
Yeah, that's then, you know what, Corey, that's exactly the feeling that I got. I got the feeling that this was just like Kevin Nash coming back, going to his buddy, going, hey man, let's do a program together. Make some money together.
Yep.
Triple H goes, okay.
Yeah.
Goes and asks his wife, and sure
I'm
enough,
sure that happens in wrestling all the time, though.
Well, that'd be like, you know, me coming and saying, hey, Corey, let's you and me have a program.
Yeah.
Right? And okay, well, let's rewrite all the storylines.
And just because...
redo all the matches.
And just because you run the show, you know, you have the power to do that, then it happens.
That's what that's what this whole thing feels like to me. It feels like Kevin Nash just came back, said to Triple H, hey, man, let's make some money, let's do a program together. Triple H is like, okay, well, we got to shuffle around some people, change up some cards a bit, you know, change up an angle here or there, and okay, let's do it.
But then on the other hand, I would argue that what I saw on Monday was very well done. I really enjoyed what those two have done so far to advance
it's very believable, yeah.
That power bomb that you saw at Vengeance from Kevin Nash that Kevin Nash gave to Triple H, I thought was done very well. I mean, you could argue that
it was done well by both. It was good execution by Nash, and it was a good sell by Triple H.
It was. And then what you saw on Monday, the intimidation factor, the aggression, the look in his eye, everything about Kevin Nash on Monday to me screamed, yeah, this guy still has it. I really thought he did very well. He looked mean, and he looked pissed off. And he didn't hold back on Triple H. And that comes down to the trust between those two. I mean, obviously, those two are saying, let's go all out. And let's make this as realistic as possible. And let's make everyone believe that we do hate each other. I really thought they did a very convincing job in that department. And the other thing about Kevin Nash is, from when we first saw him on TV earlier in the summer to now, he's been working out. He looks pretty damn good.
I will admit, he does look a little bit better, but still can't move worth crap, though.
Well, he's a big man. I mean, look at all the big men. They can't move as well as they ever want them to move. But he still, I really thought that he did a very good job on Monday. So I am kind of looking forward to seeing these two produce some sort of story that I'm going to get into.
Well, I've always thought, Corey, that the best matches were done between guys who are either best friends or they hate each other.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I agree with that, sure.
Those are when you see the best matches, I personally think.
So how do you see this one playing out? Again, it's early, but how do you see it playing out?
I don't think it's going to be the greatest match, but I can see Triple H going over in the end.
Oh, I don't think there's any way Triple H loses.
No.
I don't think Triple H loses anytime soon from here on out.
I honestly foresee Triple H pretty much carrying Nash through the actual match.
In fact, that's probably why they switched the whole program with Kevin Nash, was because he can't wrestle a full match and he needs someone that he can trust, you know,
he's notoriously bad at putting other people over. So, I mean, if you're going to find somebody to work with Nash, who better than his friend Triple H, right?
But Kevin Nash is a short-term investment. Triple H is a long-term investment for the company. I mean, Triple H is the man to take over from Vince McMahon.
Yeah.
So I don't see Kevin Nash beating the man who's taking over for Vince.
Unless they do some sort of swerve or angle or something.
Yeah.
Which is always a possibility.
To me, this is a short-term program that's going to make both men a bit of money, make the company a bit of money. It'll be a decent story for the fans to watch. I don't know how the rest of the locker room feels about it. But
what are they going to do?
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Now, I don't know if we're going to see the payoff at Survivor Series, but right, it might continue after, I think.
You think so?
Yeah.
Well, of course, they're going to drag it out. So, I mean, we've used up all of our options with who could interfere in a match of this. I mean, everyone else is involved with other programs now. Yeah. Who could it be? I mean, are there any options? If there is a swerve of some kind, like, what would that swerve be? I mean, I haven't really thought about it myself, but...
What, for Kevin Nash?
Yeah, for the Kevin Nash and Triple H, yeah.
No, you know what? I don't know. Unless they do some sort of surprise.
I guess that'll be something for next week.
Yeah.
Okay, we got to wrap it up a little earlier than normal today, James, because we have another interview to get to. But anyways, that'll do it this week for Tale of the Tape. Now would be a good time to remind everyone that you can email us anytime before, during, and after the show at onair@smacktalkradiolive.com. And if it's any good, we'll put it on the air.
The poll question. Log on to Facebook.com/SmackTalkRadio and cast your vote.
All right, the poll question this week on Smack Talk Radio Live: The Rock and John Cena teaming up together at Survivor Series. You a fan?
Well, these are your choices, people. Either heck yeah, I'm looking forward to it. God no, keep them separated until WrestleMania, or it doesn't matter, Truth and Miz will destroy them.
If you want to take part, log on to Facebook.com/SmackTalkRadio and cast your vote. And quickly, James, what are your thoughts on this?
God no, save until WrestleMania. Do you have an ask?
I know. It's such a tough one, isn't it?
It is.
Like, I understand why they're doing it. I just don't agree with it.
Again, I'm a fan of the old school booking, so I'm not a fan.
So... How excited are you for Survivor Series in general at this point?
Actually, you know what? I'm thinking it's shaping up so far to be an alright show.
Yeah?
Yeah.
We haven't even got into the whole SmackDown side of things.
No. Well, they haven't had SmackDown yet, so...
Sin Cara versus Sin Cara. Mask versus mask. You didn't see it, did you?
No, I didn't see that one. I missed that one.
I did see it.
Well, tell me a little bit about how'd that go.
I thought the match was very well done.
Yeah.
It was a very good luchador match. They actually did unmask... The Black Sin Cara.
Right.
I've got their names mixed up. They've got separate
Unico.
Names. No, they have actual names now.
Oh, do they?
Yeah, it's Sin Cara, La Negra, and then it's escaped my mind.
Oh, okay.
They have identified the two. But anyways, the Black Sin Cara did get demasked, which I'm very surprised it did on a SmackDown, but I can also understand that they did it in Mexico City, which is why they, you know.
You'd think they'd save something like that for a pay-per-view.
You would think. But anyways, it's done. It's over with. Where we go from here, I'm not really quite sure. But yeah, I thought it was really well done. It was actually the best Sin Cara match that I have seen so far, and that's not saying a lot. Okay, everyone, coming up on Smack Talk Radio Live, we have a chance to talk to Harry Smith, better known to some of you as D.H. Smith, in his recent stint with the WWE.
Also in tonight's Top 5, keeping with the Halloween spirit, we run down the Top 5 craziest costumes in professional wrestling.
And our post-to-post report next.
This is Smack Talk Radio Live.
Catching you up with the business of the business. It's time for the post-to-post report.
All right, the post-to-post report, James.
Catching you up to date on the business of the business.
Go ahead, buddy.
Well, hey, man, have you you watched that show Big Bang Theory?
I only watch it when I see the girl on the show.
She is quite cute, isn't she?
I don't watch it for any other reason.
You know what? I had a good friend of mine turn me on to the show, and I'm telling you, if you guys don't watch this show, actually, it's made by the same guy who made Two and a Half Men. And it's you know, it's quite a funny show. The characters are really well developed, and it's actually quite a well-written show.
All right, I'll check that out. Okay, can I start it off?
Go right ahead, man.
The Post-to-Post Report, let's kick it off this week with some disheartening news. Former NWA World Champion Barry Windham reportedly suffered a heart attack earlier in the week. The 50-year-old is currently recovering in a Florida hospital, and his father, WWE Hall of Famer Blackjack Mulligan, posted a note on Facebook asking fans to keep Windham in their prayers.
Some more sad news in the wrestling world, as WWE Hall of Famer Jerry Briscoe suffered a mild stroke last Wednesday as he was being driven to the airport to scout amateur wrestlers for WWE at the Pan American Games. Now, Jim Ross had been updating the public, most recently saying that Briscoe is now home from a Tampa hospital and is feeling better, but still has some more tests to undergo.
We say sad news, but it could be a lot more sad than what we're reporting.
Well, not good news, I guess.
These two men are recovering. That's the most important part. Former WWE star David Heath, better known as Gangrel, actually, was involved in a motorcycle incident last Wednesday. Now, the former Brood leader was riding his motorcycle in Burbank, California, when he turned a corner and was struck by an oncoming car. Ooh. Doctors diagnosed him with a fractured elbow and is now wearing a cast. Now, what's interesting to know here, James, is that Heath was scheduled to appear at a local All-Star Wrestling Super Show, which took place last Friday just outside Vancouver in Cloverdale, BC. Now, we spoke with Michelle Starr, promoter of the event, and he told us that Heath was still planning to live up to his obligations and fly up for the event, but Starr told him to rest up, take it easy, and they've agreed to have Heath arrive in the ASW January 13th.
Should be a good show.
I'm looking forward to that one.
The Miami Herald published a new article this week looking at what city officials had to do to bring WrestleMania 28 to their city next year. City officials promised a $250,000 subsidy, along with other perks and access to Miami-Dade County's three largest venues, the Sun Life Stadium, the Miami Beach Convention Center, and the American Airlines Arena. Mike Sophia, head of the Miami-Dade Sports Commission, was quoted as saying, "This event is as big as it gets for a city. WrestleMania is up there with the Super Bowls and the Final Fours." Now, earlier this week, the WWE released a study saying WrestleMania 27 had brought a whopping $62 million last year to the Atlanta economy, almost entirely thanks to out-of-town wrestling fans booking hotel rooms and eating at local restaurants. Now, knowing this information, 3 years ago, WWE changed how they took a look at picking the host city for their Super Bowl-like event, and now they invite cities to make bids for WrestleMania. Just a quick note that tickets for WrestleMania 28 go on sale November 5th.
What's interesting to note about this, James, is the roles have reversed. Before, it was WWE desperately searching to have WrestleMania in a city somewhere. Mm-hmm. But now, because WrestleMania has become such a big event, they can actually have cities come to them and submit bid proposals, almost like cities or countries do with the Olympics. And I'm sure in those bid proposals are incentives that are in favor of the WWE.
Oh, of course, there's got to be.
My, how the times have changed.
No kidding.
Now, while not made public on television yet, it was announced at the SmackDown taping in Mexico City that Lucha legend Mil Máscaras is the first inductee into the 2012 WWE Hall of Fame. The announcement was made by Triple H.
All I have to say is it's about time. WWE and the TD Garden have confirmed on their websites that Mick Foley will be appearing at the November 14th 3-hour Raw Super Show from Boston, Massachusetts. Foley was last seen in the WWE on the June 1st, 2008 edition of Monday Night Raw.
And finally, the Muppets, James. They're going to be on Raw this upcoming Monday for the special Halloween episode.
Well, this could either be something spectacular or go down in history as one of the worst ideas that WWE's ever done.
It's going to be comedic for sure.
Oh, I'm personally leaning more towards the latter.
Okay, WWE financials quickly, as we do each and every week here on the show. The current WWE stock price, $10.53 a share. Now, that's actually up 53 cents from this time last week.
Do you ever notice how the stock price coincides with the Rock's appearances, how the stock always goes up?
I haven't made that connection yet. I will start to watch that a little closer, though. What's interesting not really WWE related, but it is somewhat related. But former WWE CEO Linda McMahon has actually contributed over $600,000 of her own personal wealth to start her 2012 U.S. Senate campaign in Connecticut. This is, of course, according, or not of course, but this is according to her campaign's first fundraising report. The campaign reported $1.2 million in initial expenses as part of the launch. So she is sparing no expense to try and get elected into the Senate this time.
Hey, at least it's not the XFL.
You can't make the connection with XFL and the politics. That's not the same.
Hey, it's money-losing ventures.
Okay, all right, I'll see you. In terms of television ratings, the October 24th edition of Monday Night Raw scored a 3.31 rating the night after the Vengeance pay-per-view. Now, that's up 0.2 from a 3.10 rating last week. Raw averaged 4.71 million viewers on the night. The first hour averaged 4.93 million. I guess they were wanting to check out the immediate pay-per-view fallout, right. But then that number declined to an average of 4.50 million viewers in the second hour. Now, on cable TV Monday night, Raw was number two behind ESPN's Monday Night Football in key male demographics, but they actually saw a resurgence in teen male viewers, leading them to a number one ranking in that demo. And I would probably assume that that has to do with adults tuning out to watch football or the World Series. Now, in terms of pay-per-view numbers, the only stat I have for you this week is that the WWE's recent Vengeance pay-per-view, which took place from San Antonio, Texas, drew about 8,000 fans into the arena.
Ooh.
That's actually considered quite a disappointment for that area.
Wow.
So that's the post-to-post report this week, James. I don't know. Not really anything huge.
Nah, yeah, nothing, you know, nothing crazy, but...
But we do have something very crazy right now. And that was, we had a chance to speak with son of legendary WWE wrestler, the British Bulldog. His name is Harry Smith, who most of you might know as D.H. Smith, who's just coming off a recent stint with the WWE.
Right, and this was at the ASW Super Show.
Yeah, so D.H. Smith was in town in just outside Vancouver, Cloverdale it's called, the suburb's called Cloverdale. Anyways, they had the ASW Super Show, which we talked about last week. He actually wrestled a match with the Rocket Randy Tyler. You were there. I was there. What did you think of that match?
I thought the match with Harry and Rocket Randy Tyler was easily the match of the night.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, that wasn't saying much.
Yeah. We'll get into that in a little bit. Okay, so here is our chance to talk with Harry Smith. We recorded this interview, what, last Friday?
Yeah.
Okay, so that keep that in mind when we listen. Last Friday, our chat with D.H. Smith.
So first of all, what did you think of the show tonight?
It was fun, you know, good being back here on the West Coast. You know, Rocket Randy Tyler is a, you know, pretty good veteran hand in there, and I enjoyed the show. Hope to be back up here very soon.
Well, you had an absolutely fantastic match, I got to tell you.
So. Thank you very much.
What do you hear about independent wrestling in the Pacific Northwest? Is there a reputation or anything like that that you're aware of or that the guys talk about?
You know what? To be fair, I'll probably give a bad answer because I just don't know. Because I mean, I'm sure that there is, you know, some sort of reputation. But with me, I honestly, you know, for the past little while, I didn't follow anything. I don't go on the websites too much or any of that stuff. So I don't know. But coming out here, seems like there's some good talent. And, you know.
I just want to start off a little bit maybe about how you got into the whole wrestling game in the first place here. Maybe
tell us a little bit about that. Shit, that'd be hard. well, you know, the family and everything just came natural. Always wanted to do it. I can get detailed about it, but it's just that's it in a nutshell, basically.
Wow. Is it true that at 10 years old you wrestled at a WWF house show in Calgary?
That is exactly true. October of 1996, there was a house show. And me and my cousin Teddy Hart, we teamed up against TJ Wilson, better known as Tyson Kidd, and Andrew Bukarnik. And it was sort of a tribute match exhibition because Ted's younger brother, Matt, had passed away earlier that summer. So,
So back in the summer of 2004, WWE actually tried to sign you to a contract, but you turned it down to do a couple of tours in Japan and to go back to college.
You know, the college thing was kind of, I was thinking about it, but I just didn't end up going through, and I wanted to go to Japan. Thankfully, I did. I think you got some enemies over there that want you in the ring. I wanted to wrestle in Japan first. I actually wanted to go there longer than just three tours, but you know, that's how the cookie got crumbled, and you know, I ended up signing to WWE. They had, you know, really wanted me for some reason at the time.
So in Japan, you wrestled under the moniker awesome. The Black Assassin.
Yep.
And apparently you hurt your hand or broke your hand. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, I can tell you that. It was on my first tour. We were 2 weeks in. I was with Chono's heel faction, which was really cool at the time. Chono, I believe it was Nakamura. Chono, Tenzan, there was a few other guys in there. So they were trying to sort of, Minoru Suzuki had come through. Okay. They were sort of trying to start like sort of like a heel NWO faction. But unfortunately, I had broken my hand 2 weeks in. El Samurai went to throw my head into the turnbuckle. And New Japan's got the boxing-like turnbuckles.
Right.
And he threw me into his opponent's corner really hard. And he's with Makabe. I just went to put my hand up at the last second. It broke and I bumped away. And unfortunately, I do get sent home because it was broken and I needed surgery. And so that, you know, it was unfortunate how that tour had ended. I was on a really good roll, really good winning streak, and, you know, that's how it happened.
Now, for those of us at home who aren't really that familiar with it, can you give us just a little quick insight into the difference between, say, the Japanese style of wrestling and, say, what you see over here in North America?
Japanese style nowadays is getting more sort of Americanized a bit. But traditional Japanese style is not so much heels and baby faces. They, you know, characters a little bit, but the crowds react differently. They're usually quiet until some sort of action happens or a surprise or a near fall. It's more wrestling based. And, you know, years ago, it was a lot of big, big guys over there that could really, really wrestle, like Stan Hansen and Terry Gordy, Steve Williams. You know, the list goes on and on. All Japan's guy jeans at the time. And but, you know, nowadays things have they've changed a little bit. They're getting a little bit more Americanized. It's not so many chair shots or, you know, they got hardcore promotions and stuff. So it's very much the same, but it's different, you know, still.
Okay, so you had a very successful run in a tag team with T.J. Wilson,
yep.
Better known as Tyson Kidd to
yep.
All the people who watch him on TV.
That's right.
And you guys won the tag team champions, the tag team titles back in 2010
yep.
Against Show Miz. That was just after WrestleMania 26, which Corey and I were actually at live.
Oh, yeah, that was good.
So tell
yeah.
us a little bit about that.
Yeah, sure. It was great, you know. The ambience, the audience, the atmosphere was just excellent that night. You know, having my Uncle Brett out there, help, you know, being in support of us and, you know, being there to watch us, you know, win the tag team championships was really great. And it was awesome, too, you know, because leading up to WrestleMania, things were getting pretty frustrating on SmackDown. And there was no other tag teams to wrestle except for Crime Time. you know, so... and you know, things were, you know, just not really, nothing was really happening. And then once WrestleMania took off and we had that WrestleMania moment and bouncing Crazy McMahon's head off the floor on the outside was really cool. And after that we had a pretty good run as tag team champions, and you know, sort of similar to my dad's first title, he won the tag team championships with Dynamite Kid, so same as me, so it was really cool.
I had one question for you.
Sure.
How would you describe your overall experience with the WWE?
When it was good, it was good. When it was bad, it was bad. It was really annoying and frustrating at times. It's a really hard place to succeed in if certain people up there don't want you to succeed in. And I'm not trying to point the fingers at anybody necessarily, but there had to be some sort of reason why. I'm sure you guys saw me wrestle tonight. I'm pretty capable wrestler in there, and I've got you know, very good size, and I think that if they had given me the chance that they gave Drew McIntyre or Sheamus or us, you know, I mean, not that they did very good with theirs, but you know, they give Nathan Jones and some of these big guys the world, and they end up you know, crumbling. If they had given me just a little bit of that after Tyson and I had split up, or both of us, I think that we could have really done something, but they seem content on not doing anything for whatever reason, and but that's fine. I'm off to other things now.
What has the door been left open? What's your
yes.
relationship with them now?
My relationship with them now is okay. Johnny left the door open for me. You know, everything was good. I think that they would like to have me back in a couple years. And I think, sort of in hindsight, I think that they realized that it was sort of their fault that they didn't capitalize or do anything with me. And I think that, you know, being that the door is open, you know, always the saying is you leave and you come back a bigger star a couple of years. But I'm not necessarily, you know, right now I just kind of want to let things, just kind of forget about them for a while. You know, time heals and a couple of years and all of a sudden there's a big opportunity and they want to open the doors. And I would like to come back if there's certainly an opportunity. If there's not an opportunity, I'm not necessarily interested. You know, unless, you know, there's nothing going on.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think that a couple of years or a few years, if my mixed martial arts career takes off and I keep, you know, become a big star in Japan and the independent circuit again, maybe, you know, I have a lot of interest in going to Ring of Honor. You know, I think that the door would be open, come back, have a good push, and I would really like to see my dad get inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame.
Agreed.
But, you know, we got... just 25 now, so we've got lots of time.
What is your latest with MMA?
I'm just still training. You know, I'm taking it very seriously right now. I want to get my striking down really, really good. I've got natural punching power. I need to still work on my stand-up, you know, movements, head movements, my kicking. I want to get a little bit more flexible in my hips. My standing wrestling is very good for takedown defense, and my takedowns are very good. Training with Billy Robinson, I'm going back and forth between here in Little Rock, Arkansas, to train with him. And I'm training in Tampa, Florida, with Dave Bautista's MMA gym. And it's just so funny how it happens in life. One door closes, and another door opens. And as soon as I left WWE, opened up a gym right in my home where I'm living, and I started going there. And he's a big guy, so we're sparring partners, and it's going pretty good, man. I'm really excited about what's to come with that.
Is a first fight in the future?
I would say it's going to be some time still. You know, maybe could be 8 months, a year, could be a year and a half. I'm not exactly sure. I want to, you know, whoever I go up against, I want to make sure skills, and we're still toying with different weights. I'm actually 265 right now. And I've gained about 10, 15 pounds since leaving the WWE. I'm on a really good strength and conditioning program. But we've actually toyed around with the idea of me dropping to 205. John Jones is 6'4", 205, yeah, which is almost my height. So, you know, we're toying with it. I don't know if 205 is going to be too light for me, with, you know, big frame, if that'll make me weaker or if that'll just make me faster. So we're just toying with different weights. I'm going to try to maybe cut down to about 240 coming up in the next couple of months to see how I go. If I can walk around at 230, 240, I can drop down to 205, you know. Mm-hmm. It's a couple of days in the sauna, and you know what I mean. So we're just toying with different weights, different things. I want to get my training good, you know, because whoever I go up against, I'll take their head off.
Yeah.
And stretch them.
How many days a week are you training?
Usually, on average, about four. Reason being, just it's usually a Monday to Thursday, and since I left WWE, a lot of independent bookings have come up, so it's been like a Friday Saturday deal, and mm-hmm. You know, fly home Sunday or you know whatever. So the, you know, it's usually 4 days a week. When it comes fight time, it's going to be like about 6 days a week, but that's in a little bit time to come. And you know, when in I'll be have to be really serious about, you know, 3 months in, what weight we have to get at, what we have to do. So
right on. So currently you're signed with the Inoki Jiu-Jitsu Federation?
Yes, that's correct.
Can you
yes.
talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, for sure. You know, Inoki has been really great with me. You know, I actually met Inoki a few years ago, you know, when I was first in New Japan, but just high and by. But he came to, you know, WrestleMania and Phoenix, I believe. The same one with Brett, you know, with Vince McMahon. And, you know, we had a good talk, and, you know, he... Josh Barnett had spoken to Inoki-san and had spoken very highly about my skills and thought that I could be a very good talent in MMA. And Inoki was excited to meet me, and he sort of gave me the door open that if I ever left WWE, you know, the door would be open there. So it was comforting. For the WrestleMania art show that year, for charity, I actually drew a little shrine of Inoki with the big chin and everything. And I gave him a copy of it framed. So he really liked it. And when I went to the IGF office when I was in Japan, I saw he had it hung up in his office. So I thought that was pretty cool. And You know, Simon and Inoki-san have been really good to me. I like the style. I like kind of the half shoot stuff that they do over there, and some of the mixed matches, and they have pro wrestling there too. So I like it. I'm excited to go back there soon.
Right on. Well, Harry, we're going to have to wrap things up here pretty quick, but one last thing we like to do here on Smack Talk in our interviews is like a little bit of a word association thing. Okay. I'm just going to throw a couple names at you, and you just tell me the first thing that comes to your mind. So we'll start off real easy here. Bret Hart.
Oh, yeah, man. Excellence of execution. I agree 100% with all of his psychology that he has in his wrestling matches, and when he talks to me about things, I always agree with him on the wrestling psychology.
Okay, Shawn Michaels.
Great charisma, the showstopper, hell of a talent. It's too bad he had to retire, but you know, it was good that he was on his own free will.
Here's a good one, John Laurinaitis.
I like John, actually. I think he's got a bad job, you know. I wouldn't want to ever have that job. not enough money could pay me. The guy's freaking more busy than Vince, and he just does pretty much all their dirty work. But John's cool. He actually signed me. He liked me because I was big, and I went to Japan. And, you know, we always talked about All Japan and stuff. I'd ask him questions. And I know he's a good guy coming up with finishes. I wish I could have worked more with him, but John's cool. I don't mind John at all.
Okay, Vince McMahon?
He's a crazy genius. But, he's a workhorse. He's, you know, when push comes to shove, you know, he's just survived through the test of time, so you got to give him that much.
Yep. Okay, two more. Sure. Hulk Hogan.
Brother.
I love Hogan. I'm sure you can tell I did the big boot and that dance and a leg drop or whatever. No, I love Hogan. Hogan's great. You know, I don't know if...
episode of Hogan Knows Best, weren't you?
Yeah, that's right. That was okay, whatever. Brooke and I didn't necessarily, you know, hit it off, but it was fine. We were cordial with each other. But, no, Hogan, I really like him. I don't know if I would ever go to TNA, possibly. I would like to actually work with Hogan. You know, big fan of his. Love the leg drop, big boot, brother. I want to be one of Hogan's buddies. No, I'm just kidding. But Hogan's pretty cool. I like him.
Okay, last one on a serious note, British Bulldog, Roy Smith.
Oh, yeah, you know, one of the most powerful superstars in the entire pro wrestling business. not only a great tag team wrestler, great singles competitor, you know, one of my idols, one of my heroes. You know, just hope I'm doing proud.
So there you go, Harry Smith, former WWE star in town recently. And I really liked what he had to say there,
James.
That was
a really good interview. Some little bit of controversial stuff there, but...
Well, it's what we always want as
absolutely
people who work in the media somewhat.
It's got to be juicy.
One thing I definitely got the vibe from, or the vibe I was feeling when we were talking to him, was he is aiming towards MMA.
I think so,
more
and
less of professional wrestling.
Which is good for him. I mean, he's a big guy. He'll, you know.
It's also interesting to note that he's training with Dave Bautista.
Yeah, down in Batista's gym.
Mm-hmm. So I thought that was very interesting, and I can't thank D.H. Smith, or Harry Smith, as he likes to be called. Can't thank him enough for coming on our show. He had no idea what our show was about, but he agreed to do it anyways. So,
well, all he's got to do now is take a listen, and you'll find out.
Thank you very much, Harry Smith. And, yeah, our first big-name interview under wraps.
Hey, it was a good one, I think.
All right, James. And everyone else listening at home, coming up on the show, we are going to talk the local wrestling scene. And we're talking ECCW, more specifically their annual show, which takes place Friday. That's called Halloween Hell. And we're talking with the Honky Tonk Kid live.
And as always, in tonight's top five, we are going to run down for you the top five craziest professional wrestling costumes.
This is Smack Talk Radio Live. May you step, no coincidental murder. Nothing to show when the judge of constipation go to his head and his wife's aggravation. You soon end up dead. That's the same old story, same old song and dance, my friend. That's the same old story, same old song and dance, my friend. Got you with the cocaine and found with your gun. No smooth face, a lawyer could get you undone. Same old story.
the local wrestling scene, bringing you up to date with the promotions all over the Pacific Northwest.
All right, James, the local wrestling scene, catching you up to date with all the latest in the Pacific Northwest. Now, we had a chance to check out ASW Super Show, which took place last Friday.
Well, we just got our wonderful interview with D.H. Smith.
And how did you feel? We'll quickly just quickly talk about that because we have someone waiting on the line. But how did you feel about the ASW Super Show?
To be honest, I don't think it was probably the best product they could have put out. I mean, technically, there was a lot of issues. The sound was really bad. You couldn't really hear what the guys were saying clearly. Their projection screen, which was a cool idea, wasn't really calibrated properly, and lighting was kind of off. But other than the technical issues,
I didn't think it was a terrible show. I just thought it had some poor moments. My first constructive criticism is they have to improve the speakers, the audio.
Oh, definitely.
I had a hard time hearing the promos, and the promos lasted so long that...
That was like a 40-minute promo building up to
their tag
match.
Which is fine, which I don't mind if I can hear, but I couldn't hear, and that would be my only real criticism.
It was, well, people were yelling, let's see some wrestling, and there were actually people leaving, walking out the door, and that's bad. That's not what you want to see.
Mm-hmm. But overall, I thought it was a decent show. I mean, you got to remember, James, ECCW and ASW are two completely different shows.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one is geared for families and one is geared for an audience like you and I.
That's
more
right.
of a hardcore wrestling fan. So keeping that in mind, I didn't find it to be a bad show. I don't think it was their best show of the year.
No.
And they call it the Super Show, which was supposed to be their best show of the year, I think. So
you want to quickly run down the card?
Quickly. We had Seth Knight taking on the mighty, is it Iton or Eton?
I don't know. He was
I'm not
a fan. That's all I'm going to say of this mighty Eton guy.
He needs a new ring attire. I will say that. He's wearing a bathrobe.
It was a black karate gi that was like two sizes too small for him. So it was...
We also then had Bruiser Joe come out, and he talked for a little while, cutting a promo. I always enjoy Bruiser Joe. I think he's very good on the mic.
It was like his interview. He has like an interview segment type thing.
Which I think he does a very good job at that. Although I did notice at one point through his talk show, he wasn't even really involved. I remember at one point someone asked, someone tried to get his attention, and he wasn't even paying attention to what was going on in the ring.
Yeah, I thought that was kind of funny.
His talk show went all crazy.
It was basically a 40-minute segment where they were setting up their tag match for later on the night, and it would have been all right if we could hear what they were saying, clearly.
Mm-hmm. And then we had the tag team of Lumberjack Bubba and Toga Boy come out, who are the ASW Tag Team Champions, and a bit of a surprise to everyone, we actually saw the retirement of Lumberjack Bubba.
Yeah, that was weird. He just walked into the ring, gave up his belt, said goodbye, crowd chanted, thank you, Bubba, and
again, here's my biggest thing. I really enjoy Lumberjack Bubba, and I couldn't even tell he was retiring because I couldn't hear, so I didn't know what was going on.
Yeah, it was a little bit of an emotional disconnect there.
It was. Like, I would have given him a proper send-off if I could figure out what exactly was happening, but oh well. So Toga Boy was left without a tag team partner as tag team champions, so who filled Lumberjack Bubba but the newcomer, Matt Ecstatic?
You know what, Corey? Honestly, I did not like this whole segment one bit, just how this whole thing played out. So they essentially stripped the belt off of Toga Boy without him being beaten or pinned, and he was just completely fine with it. Okay.
Yeah.
And then the worst part about it is that they took him completely out of the title picture altogether.
So he came out as tag team champion.
He came out as tag team champion.
And he left the ring as someone who had to prove himself all over again.
Like, without being beaten at all. It just, I don't know, it did not make sense to me personally.
Mr. India and TKO came out, and they argued that they should be in line for the tag team championships.
Yep.
We also then had Greatness on Demand, and that consists of Michelle Starr and Disco Fury, and they also argued their case for being tag team champions. In the end, Scotty Sweatervest said that it would be Greatness on Demand versus Mr. India and TKO
for the tag belts later on in the night, and that's essentially what the whole segment was leading up to.
And then later on, after the dust settled on that, we did see Freddie Funk come out, and he cut a promo which the crowd was not into at all.
No.
Gotta
give it to Freddie Funk. He gets the good heel heat.
I like his gimmick. I think he needs the shake weight. The shake weight is the key to his success.
Yeah.
He didn't have the shake weight, and no one was responding.
So, and then they had a match, right? Bruiser Joe and
Freddie Funk. Yeah, they had an impromptu match, Bruiser Joe versus Freddie Funk. Freddie Funk ended up taking it in the end with a roll-up.
Oh, terrible match. Sorry, guys. It was bad.
Jeez, you're harsh today.
I'm going to call it like I see it.
Then we had Greatness on Demand versus India, Mr. India and TKO. Mr. India and TKO ended up taking the victory on that one.
That's right.
Then we also had Azeem the Dream and Travis Sparks versus Matt Ecstatic and Toga Boy. And this was their chance to prove themselves like they had spoken about earlier. But in the end, it was actually Azeem and Travis Sparks who picked up the victory.
So it was kind of like your first sight of an ECCW wrestler wrestling at the show.
And that was followed up with another ECCW wrestler, and that was Scotty Mack, who ended up taking on the Great Kasaki. And in the end, it was Scotty Mack who got DQ'd.
Right.
And Artemis Spencer made an appearance out of the crowd and kind of set up a match between Scotty and Artemis.
I thought that was kind of interesting how they did that, how they kind of promoted an angle that was going on in another promotion.
What was funny for me was I was in the washroom about 5 minutes before this match started, and I was talking to Artemis Spencer.
Right.
And then like 5 minutes later, he's in the ring.
Jeez. Doing a maneuver. I think he did like a missile dropkick off the top rope.
Which looked very
good. It looked very good. So no, that was a good match. I thought Scotty Mack and Kasaki worked really well.
And then in the main event, we did see D.H. Smith, or Harry Smith,
right,
take on the Rocket Randy Tyler. And I got to tell you right off the bat here, James, I absolutely loved Randy Tyler's entrance.
Oh,
he rolled into the venue.
Fantastic. He saved the show, in my opinion.
He rolled into the venue in a limousine. The limousine came right into the building.
That's right. People were clearing out of the way. And it wasn't just one of these small limousines. No, it was one of these big stretch, like SUV-type limousines.
Yeah, like an excursion, I think it was.
Okay, that's what it was.
It looked excellent.
No, it was. It was very cool.
Randy Tyler, he is
top-notch, man. I'm a huge total Randy Tyler fan. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And that's why they pit him up against Harry Smith.
And you know what? Those guys worked a heck of a match. It was really good.
Okay, so that was the ASW Super Show. Maybe we'll dive into it another time at a later date. But more importantly, right now, I want to talk about Halloween Hell, which is happening October 28th, which is actually tomorrow night.
Bridgeview Hall in Surrey.
And that is their annual event, and I've been to the Halloween Hells before, and I got to say, James, these are fantastic events to go to.
Yep, I was there with you, man. They are something to see.
Before we even get anywhere, let's just get the ball rolling and tell everyone right now, if you want to get any information on Halloween Hell, check out the ECCW's website, which is www.eccw.com. Tickets are still available, and like you said, it's at Bridgeview Hall. Now, one interesting part of this main event, and we'll run down the card here in a little bit, but one interesting aspect of the main event was last weekend, the Honky Tonk Kid had a match, and if he had won that match, he actually would get an opportunity to be in the main event at tomorrow's show, Halloween Hell. And that's interesting, and he ended up pulling it off. And more importantly, James, we actually have the Honky Tonk Kid on the line right now.
Perfect.
Are you there, buddy?
Ended up pulling it off. What exactly does that mean, brother, all right? Did you doubt for 1 minute?
No, I didn't.
That I was going to lose in a guitar on a pole match? I play the guitar, sucker, all right? I ain't going to lose that, motherfucker.
Hey, let's be honest here. I told you last week that I wanted to save this interview for this week because I knew you were going to pull it out and be in the main event at Halloween Hell. Did I not say that to you?
I don't know. I tell you the truth, I don't read these text messages. I have to delete them when I see your name come up. But don't take it personal. I'm a busy man. I've got lots of people I got to get to.
Fair enough.
But let me tell you something, boys. I will never forget that moment. Tony Baroni sitting there all looking at me, slack-jawed, holding himself. Can't believe his eyes. Blammo. Guitar explodes like a firework. I dream of it.
Beautiful. So talk to me, or tell us, because we weren't able to make the show last weekend. Tell us about what happened last week to get you into the main event at Halloween Hell.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Well, me and Mr. Baroni, we have a storied past, quite frankly. And there is a match, a guitar on the pole match. Essentially, he who wins the match gets into the, well, I guess I get into the event. The non-title match against Baroni. So, dig this, wrap your mind around this one. To prove I was worthy of the championship match, I had to beat the champion. Now, I tell you, doesn't that make me the champion? I think it does.
I would tend to agree with you on that one. But the magic question is, was it a title match?
Negative. At any rate, I won the match. I'm in the main event at Halloween Hell, as per usual. And we'll see what happens. Quite frankly, I'm going into this one confident.
So you are taking part in a steel cage elimination match, and that's consisting of the champion, Tony Baroni, versus Artemis Spencer, versus Ravenous Randy, and Pete Powers, and yourself. How are you feeling about that one?
How do I feel about what?
How do you feel heading into this match?
Well, like I said, brother, I feel confident. I've been training consistently. I've been tanning consistently. I guarantee you I have a golden tan for this match.
That is the key to success.
And I think you're forgetting. Maybe you mentioned this, maybe you didn't, but Mr. El Phantasmo is also in that match.
Ah, yes, that is correct. They didn't have that. I was just going to say they didn't have that listed on the website, so I apologize for that.
Yeah, well, what they don't have listed on the website can fill a phone book, brother. I'll tell you that right now. But he presented himself after my victory against Tony Baroni in Vancouver in a rather rude way. But coming into this match, I don't feel like there's much of a challenge for me, really. I mean, Artemis Spencer, a former Pat Cup champion, but let's face it, the man's been in the Pat Cup, what, 6 times? I've only been at once. Sure, I lost, but I was only in it once. If I was in it 6 times, I would have won it 2, 3, 4, 5 times as well.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing with El Phantasmo. You know, big deal. He's coming back. He's all rusty. That's not a threat. Tony Baroni, well, I already beat him, didn't I? Pete Powers, we get along like gangbusters. I have him on my speed dial. We talk about hockey games. We hang out. You know, it's going to break my heart, but I'm going to put him away.
Is this your first steel cage match?
Yes, it is, sir. It is my first steel cage match. The first time I've been inside the unforgiving Bridgeview Hall steel cage.
Mm-hmm.
I'm quite excited. Once again, I'm confident.
I think we're all excited.
I do believe I'll be victorious.
Are you taking part in the annual costume battle royal?
No, that's quite beneath me. I'm a main eventer. I don't do that kind of thing.
Well said. Well said.
Fair enough. Now, if we could get outside Halloween Hell for a couple minutes, I wanted to ask you, Honky Tonk Kid, I'm just going to be straight up honest with you. You started wrestling in the ECCW at a time when I just was too busy. I wasn't able to follow local wrestling for a little while. And when I finally did come back to local wrestling, you had just sort of appeared on the scene. Can you enlighten me and the audience just how you got started in this whole realm of ECCW?
Well, you know, it started with a faithful phone call to the trainer at the time, the head trainer, Disco Fury. I was a bit of a lost soul, putting around Vancouver, contemplating my spiritual conflicts. And just weeks later, I was meeting him at Dewey's Pub in Port Coquitlam, where we discussed what would be expected of me, and I agreed. And the Slam Academy nestled in the bosom of Poco there. That's where I started cutting my teeth, as they say, folks.
And how long have you actually been a wrestling fan before this? Is this a childhood dream of yours, or?
Oh, yeah, well, it goes way back to my youth. I remember growing up watching wrestling when I could, mind you. Captivated my imagination. I remember one little incident that stands out in my memory is as a young adolescent, 11, 12 years old, just developing, I was being babysat by one Christina, I forget her last name, but she was an ample, buxom young 17-year-old, and we had a bit of a play wrestling match on the living room floor after watching some wrestling show, and why it really tantalized my appetite. She was Brutus the Barber Beefcake because he was cute. I was Macho Man Randy Savage because he's a badass. That was it.
That's how it all got started, did it?
That's how it all got started. That was the seed that grew into the mighty oak.
So who are some of your favorite guys to watch growing up?
Oh, let's see here. Macho Man, he was a big one. Of course, Bret Hart, I enjoyed. on the local scene, Ladies' Choice captured my heart early on. Who else did I enjoy? I was a Beefcake fan as well. Hogan, of course.
Mm-hmm.
I was of that era, you know.
So how serious are you about wrestling? Do you travel outside the Pacific Northwest territory, or do you have any stories of when you have wrestled outside ECCW?
Oh, well, let me think about that one. Yeah, I've traveled here and there. I've been to, you know, Alberta region. I'm going to go to DOA on November 19th. I've been to NWA Hollywood in California. One time, a makeshift traveling companion, Mr. Bomber Nelson Creed, and I went there for a little bit of a wrestling tour, and we ended up sleeping on Venice Beach and sharing a 2-6 of Admiral's Rum, which cost $12.99 in America, with a young hobo who told us tales of all the local stabbings in the area. It was a night to remember. Went to Alberta a few times, wrestled for a promotion called Old School, which I believe is shut down.
I've heard
the promoter, I think, went on a spiritual journey of some sort to build orphanages or something like that. I don't know.
You had mentioned to me earlier that you had been to Atlanta before. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. When I first started to train, or attempted to train, the local wrestling school that is currently run by Gorgeous Michelle Starr was on hiatus at the time. And then so I attempted to look into one in Atlanta. And though the website seemed promising, when I arrived, it was nothing more than a mall front with some crash mats on the floor, and it just reeked of garbage. And so I was out of there quicker than I don't know what.
Mm-hmm. So keeping with your personal career here then, what are some of your greatest accomplishments to date when you look back at what you've done so far? What are some standout memories?
Well, let me see here. I remember with my ill-gotten faction, the Church of Divine Prophecy, Mr. Matt Classic curb-stomped Manther on the hollowed-out Book of Divine Prophecy containing a brick. That one I always remembered because that happened to be the death rattles of his wrestling career. So I feel myself personally responsible for that, and it's a point of pride. Another time I was fortunate enough to wrestle on TV in Hollywood, California, down in Yuma, Arizona, against the Navajo Warriors, I believe, in a tag match there. Tagging with young Adam Ryder. I was part of a 300-man battle royal in some garbage flophouse league in LA there.
Man.
It was amazing. Highlighted with a power bomb into the porta body spot with a old lady crawling out after the bump. That was classic.
Jeez, that's worth the price of the ticket alone.
There you go. In the battle royal, all 300 fellas were in there, and one of the rings just collapsed. It broke. And everybody started brawling like they were just crazier than a, you know, outhouse rat. It was phenomenal.
And this is one of your standout memories.
Oh, yeah, for sure. For sure.
Well, all right, Davis, we got to kind of wrap things up here. One thing we like to do with all our local wrestling scene interviews is just a little bit of a word association game. So I'm going to throw a few names at you, and you just give me a one word or a couple word response here, kind of like the first thing that comes to your mind. So I'll start it off really easy. Artemis Spencer.
Nice teeth.
Okay. How about CM Punk?
Gimmick dealer. Stole my gimmick.
Okay. How about Michelle Starr?
Handsome.
Okay. How about Danny Deeds?
Skinny.
El Phantasmo?
Fist.
Okay, let's go back to WWE here. How about John Cena?
No association with him whatsoever, to tell the truth.
Okay, a couple more here. Harry Smith. D.H. Smith.
also big.
That's true. Okay, Nick Price.
Facial hair.
Okay, all right, I'll finish it off here. How about Hulk Hogan? That's the one I always like to finish it off with.
Oh, mustache, Daddy. It's all about that mustache.
Actually, one more. I got one last one for you. The Honky Tonk Man.
Yeah, that's the defensive one close to my heart. Father, Dad, as in Hebrew would say, Abba. Disappointment, heartache, longing, confusion.
These are only supposed to be one-word answers.
Well, you opened a can of worms, all right, brother? Well, you opened a can of worms.
Well, go ahead. Fill us in. What's the background with the Honky Tonk Kid?
Oh, come on, man. Well, I'll tell you right now. You know, before I was a Honky Tonk Kid, I was the Divine Prophet. For the longest time, I believed myself to be a virginal birth and the representative of the Lord on earth. As I continued and I kind of examined things, I realized that my spiritual family had fallen apart. The Church of Divine Prophecy disintegrated. I wanted to know about my real family, my physical family. Did a little digging. I wasn't a virginal birth like my mother told me ever since I was knee-high to a nipper. No, as a matter of fact, I had a father. There's an explanation for my mysterious southern accent, my mysterious draw to the square circle. And I firmly believe that the Honky Tonk Man is my biological father.
Well, that's...
What would he have to say about that? Do you know or no?
Quite frankly, your guess is as good as mine. Since I came to this realization, I've been trying to contact the Honky Tonk Man, but I have not received any answer to my phone calls or my emails or even the postcards that I've been sending. Maybe, you know, he's a busy man, I understand that, and this and that, but I'm really eager to make that connection with him and, you know, do all that father and son stuff that I missed out on growing up.
Well, I definitely hope that works out for you. And more importantly, I want to let you know that I'm looking forward to seeing you tomorrow, Friday, October 28th, at Bridgeview Hall in Surrey for ECCW's Halloween Hell. Once again, you're taking on Tony Baroni, Artemis Spencer, Ravenous Randy, Pete Powers, and El Phantasmo in an elimination-style cage match.
What can they expect?
Your guess is as good as mine, but I know those skilled athletes are going to be pulling out all the stops to try to pin my beautiful shoulders to the mat for a three count. But there's still a little bit of a prophet in me, and I foresee myself victorious with Tony Baroni's belt around my waist, laughing in all their faces, and I can guarantee you that much.
Honky Tonk Kid, thank you very much for doing this for us.
Much appreciated.
All right, night-night, boys.
Talk to you soon. Once again, that is the Honky Tonk Kid, also formerly known as the Divine Prophet,
mm-hmm.
and he is facing off in a cage match tomorrow. ECCW.com for tickets and details. That was pretty entertaining, James.
It was. Let's quickly run down this Halloween Hell card before we get to the next commercial break. Okay, so we're going to have an annual costume battle royal, which is kind of like something they do every year at Halloween Hell, where the wrestlers kind of like dress up as other wrestlers and they have a over-the-top battle royal. We're also going to see an NWA-ECCW Tag Team Championship match that G.O.D., Greatness on Demand, which consists of Michelle Starr and Disco Fury. They're going to be taking on the ECCW Tag Champions, the Bollywood Lions, Gerv and Harv Sira. We're also going to see an NWA Canadian Junior Heavyweight Championship bout that has Alex Plexus, the champion, taking on Nick Price. We're also going to see an ECCW Women's Championship match that has Casey Spinelli taking on Nicole Matthews. Then we're also going to see a Fans Bring the Weapons match, Moondog Manson's Hardcore Invitational for the vacant ECCW Hardcore Championship. So, I don't know, bring whatever you got. Bring a lawnmower, bring a chainsaw, bring a board with a nail in it.
That's an interesting one, isn't it? It's a fully loaded question. What do you bring?
No kidding.
Mm-hmm.
Then we're going to see a dog collar chain match between Bishop and Sid Salem. Now, that's kind of where they have the chain that connects to the collars on their necks, I think, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay, and then we're going to see an escape-only cage match that features Scotty Mack versus Jason Sullivan, and then, of course, the main event that we were just talking about. For the NWA ECCW Canadian Championship, it's an elimination cage match. It's got the Honky Tonk Kid, which we were just talking to, El Fantasmo, Pete Powers, Ravenous Randy, Artemis Spencer, and the champion, Tony Baroni.
Everyone, I'm telling you right now, this is one of the best shows the ECCW puts out every year.
I'm really looking forward to it, actually.
Any show at Bridgeview Hall, I'm always a fan of. Once again, ECCW.com for tickets and details. Thank you very much to the Honky Tonk Kid. And we got to take a quick commercial break. But coming up on Smack Talk Radio Live,
tonight's top five, the craziest wrestling costumes.
This is Smack Talk Radio Live.
Yeah. And I know she's a law. And she know I'm the ball. And she know I get high above the law. And she know I'm wrong. She know I'm from the street. And all she want me to do is fuck the police. Talking about we. When I get up all in ya, well, we can hear the angels calling us. And we can see the sunrise before us. And when I'm in that thing, I make it ice side. Number, she said 911, huh? Emergency only. Head doctor, perform surgery on me. Yeah, and now I'm healed. I make a word of my handcuffs and heels. And I beat it like a cow. I'm the king, baby. Yeah, I beat it like a cow. Beat it like
you're listening to Smack Talk Radio Live. Helping you remember what most of us couldn't. Tonight's top five.
Okay, everybody, welcome to this week's top five. We're running a little bit short on time here, so we'll try to make it quick as possible. Tonight's top five. In the spirit of Halloween, we're going with the craziest wrestling costumes. Let's run it off, number five.
Hold on a sec, James. Before we get going, so is the top five craziest Halloween costumes as if I was to dress up as them, or...
No, I think this is just the most... See, crazy in this term, I guess, could be crazy good, crazy bad. It's just the most, I guess, outlandish...
Costumes or ring attire that wrestlers would wear,
right.
I see. So if I wanted to dress up as a crazy wrestler for Halloween, it would be one of these five.
Well, I wouldn't recommend it, but...
Okay, go ahead.
Number five, Max Moon. Now, I can't help but think of Mega Man every time I see a photo of Max Moon. I mean, this was the creation of Conan. Max Moon was a cyborg that hailed from outer space or the future, and he shot small fireworks out of the attachments on his arms as he made his way to the ring. Now, after he was approached by talent scout Pat Patterson, Conan spent 8 months in the World Wrestling Federation as Max Moon in 1992. His attire was blue leather, silver foam tubing, and a mask. Now, it's not so much the gimmick that made this outfit so laughable, but it's the fact that the WWE audience was supposed to get behind a cyborg that looks like he was dressed in a costume that his mom made him for Halloween.
Wow. Number four, the Shockmaster. Of course, the most criticized gimmick of all time would make this list. Setting what actually transpired as his debut aside, the Shockmaster had one of the most terrible looks in professional wrestling history. His outfit consisted of nothing more than a pair of jeans, a large furry vest, and a Star Wars Stormtrooper helmet that covered in foil and glitter.
God, that was so bad.
They didn't even care to come up with something less noticeable to create the mask with. Now, portrayed by Fred Ottman, better known as Tugboat in the WWF, the ridiculous look combined with the disastrous first appearance makes the Shockmaster one of the most laughable gimmicks ever conceived. There's a reason that the Shockmaster is still made fun of to this day.
If you guys haven't seen it already, type in Shockmaster into YouTube and prepare for a laugh. Brings us to number three, Glacier. Now, when coming up with an idea for a character, who thought it would be a good idea to mimic several superstars after a video game? Well, someone at everyone's favorite wrestling promotion, WCW, that's who. A blatant ripoff of Mortal Kombat Sub-Zero,
Glacier sported an all ice blue attire, complete with ninja style mask and helmet, and an entrance that featured blue lasers and fake snow falling from the ceiling. Played by Raymond Lloyd, an actor and martial artist, Glacier made his debut in the WCW in 1996. His entrances were long and drawn out, as he would stand on the turnbuckle to undo his armor before somersaulting to the center of the ring to do a kata routine. There have been rumors that his gear cost upwards of $35,000, Corey. And the production cost for his entrance? Nearly $500,000. Money well spent right there.
Absolutely.
Anyways, number two, the Gobbledygooker. Probably now the worst part about the Gobbledygooker was the fact that underneath the costume was a member of the legendary Guerrero family, Hector Guerrero. No? Oh yeah, the worst part was that it was a full-on turkey costume with ridiculous-looking brown feathers, yellow and orange striped leotards, and big bug eyes that would give any kid nightmares. Now, WWE had hyped the arrival of whatever was resting inside their mystery egg so much that when it finally hatched out this monstrosity at the Survivor Series in 1990, the fans were absolutely irate. Even Mark Calloway, the man we all know as The Undertaker, said he was afraid that he was going to be packaged as a chicken-like character that was going to hatch out of the egg. Well, I guess we're lucky that the WWE chose Hector Guerrero.
Wow, there are some crazy, crazy past gimmicks in the WWE, isn't there?
No kidding. And that will bring us to our number one spot.
Is that an extra microphone in your pants? Or are you just happy to see me?
Look at McMahon's face!
There are a lot of men out there. I am selective. I look very carefully to find that one who can give me the worst absolute time. That is when I make my move. And you know this one, Tootsie, 1982. Razor Ramon. I want you so bad, bad guy. More than any man or woman can ever want a human being. Look into these eyes, oh bad one. I am Gold Dust, and this is our little secret. Don't you forget the name, naughty boy, of Gold Dust.
Wow. Well, we try to keep this a family show, everybody.
I had to throw that one in there.
Well, we couldn't have a list of crazy outfits without including the bizarre one, Goldust, who takes our number one spot. Dustin Runnels, now the son of the famous Dusty Rhodes, made his debut as Goldust with a victory against Marty Jannetty at the In Your House Pay-Per-View 4 event in October 1995. Now, his initial costume was a black and gold colored jumpsuit with matching face paint and a blonde wig. But when he changed his character to the artist formerly known as Goldust, that's when things got a little bit weird, Corey. His costumes would then take on like an S&M look, with one memorable one being the green latex jumpsuit with pink tie-dyed hair and matching ball gag, complete with collar chains and nipple spikes, if you can believe it. Yikes, I kid you not.
Ugh.
Now, Runnels would also use other outlandish costumes throughout his wrestling career, and if you ever get the chance, look up Seven and Black Rain in YouTube to see his outfits during his time in WCW.
If you ever get a chance, look up the artist formerly known as Goldust on YouTube.
Yeah, that's where, it really gets weird. But anyways, currently Goldust is under contract with the WWE and is the only wrestler on this list who's still active.
Those are your top five craziest wrestling costumes.
I don't recommend being any for Halloween, but...
No kidding. If I go as the artist formerly known as Goldust, I don't know.
They're going to throw you out of wherever you go.
Guaranteed.
Or well, you might just win the costume contest, one of the two.
Well, good job on that one this week, James. Now, we are back Monday for SRL on a Monday night. And once again, you want to just fill everyone in on what that's all about?
So, that's our little bit more Raw show where we talk about Monday Night Raw after it happens. And it's just, essentially, it's a forum for you, the viewer, to
have a forum to voice your opinions on the show that you just saw. You can send us an email at onair@smacktalkradiolive.com, or you can post a comment on our Facebook page, and we'll read it on the air. Or you can call in through Skype.
Mm-hmm. Before we get out of here, I'm just going to quickly run down the results of the poll question. The Rock and John Cena teaming up together at Survivor Series. You a fan? 53% saying, God no, keep them separated until WrestleMania.
Good. I'm glad we've got some smart people listening to the show.
And believe me when I tell you, the rest of the votes we're going for doesn't matter. Truth and Miz will destroy them.
What?
Very little votes went for heck yeah, looking forward to it. I think people took this poll question as more of a joke than a serious one. Now, on next week's show, Smack Talk Radio Live, we're going to run down all the latest from the industry, and we're going to continue with the build up to Survivor Series. And in our local wrestling scene, we're going to review Halloween Hell with a man that we can't wait to bring on the show as a regular. His name is Corey Basso.
I'm excited about that.
I'm Corey Callahan.
I'm James McDonald.
Thanks for tuning in. Check back with us next week, where we're going to talk about all the latest.
This is Smack Talk Radio Live. We'll see you on Monday.